And welcome to The Deep End with Mark Kleinschmidt. We had such a great show last week. I'm so excited that CHL has let me do a second one. Hopefully, we'll be able to be here with you every weekend. On today's show, we're going to take another dive into the deep end. And this week, we're going to be focusing on transit, specifically the Durham Orange Light Rail Plan. You know, we all thought years ago this was a done deal, because I know that I and all of you out there listening went to the polls and we cast a ballot and we said, yes, we want to invest in light rail here in the Triangle. And we did it, and Durham did it, and we planned for years about what a light rail plan would look like to connect Chapel Hill and Durham. It seemed at the time, at least to me, that we were on the verge of realizing the greatness that, you know, that Chapel Hill and Durham and the potential greatness that Chapel Hill and Durham had, because it always seemed like that was the next thing that needed to happen. Well, as we all know, there were some changes in Raleigh. Politics are what they are, and with a new majority in the General Assembly, the state funding is at risk. And because the state funding's at risk, that puts the possibility of federal funding at risk. And now it looks like that whole plan that we voted for, that we're willing to tax ourselves for, is now, it may not come to fruition. So that's why I asked my guests to come in to visit with me today, Travis Creighton and Molly DeMarco. I'm sure you know them. They write for the Chapel Hill News every month, at least once every month. We see their columns where they're talking about planning issues and transit issues and other issues that we're all excited about. And they're here in the studio with me today. Travis, welcome. We're so glad to have you.
Thanks, Mark. Good to be here.
And Molly?
Hey, thank you for having us.
We're all familiar with your columns in the Chapel Hill News, but you're also the editors of a local political blog, right?
That's true.
And tell us about that one, Molly.
Yeah, so we are co-editors of a local blog called OrangePolitics.com.
It's been .org.
.org. They both go.
But they both go to the same place.
But it's been around for about 10 years or so. It was founded by Ruby Sinreich, but now we've got the helm. And I curate a lot of our social justice content around transit and living wages and a whole bunch of issues. And Travis,
you're also one of the editors there at OP?
That's correct. I've been an editor since 2013, and much like Molly sort of focuses on a social justice lens, I'm a planning graduate student as well, so I come at things from more of a planning and urban design and urban built environment sort of perspective. So I try to bring that to our columns and coverage that we provide.
Well, I'm glad you guys mentioned that part of your life focus is on social justice, at least as far as the I know, Travis, you just mentioned in some of the work, your study you're doing right now. And Molly, you're a social worker, and you spend part of your day job is in the social justice arena, right?
Well, yes, I'm actually a professor of nutrition at UNC. That's my day job for pay. I also co-chair Orange County Justice United.
That's right. It's Justice United.
We do a lot of work around social justice issues, of course, and one of the newest issues is we're developing an Orange County Transit Advocates Group. We did a lot of our first work around getting better transit service out into the Rogers Road community, and that is actually launching new service August 22nd.
So the two of you are credentialed. I mean, you have eyes that have been watching this community for a long time. You have experience writing about the issues that people are talking about. You're informing the conversation. You, I know, were both at the forefront of supporting this transit tax when it was first proposed, and the voters of Orange County voted overwhelmingly to support it. And now today, you see this extraordinary plan now at risk. You wrote a column last week. Tell us what you think the risk is here, and how real is it?
Yes, well, just to go back to what you were saying about getting the transit tax passed, I was on the committee that helped get that tax passed back a couple of years ago. So that has really been beneficial for our community in terms of providing new service, but also providing some of the funds for the Durham Orange Light Rail Transit. There's a lot of benefits to that, and I just want to note that Go Triangle has worked for years to figure out what the best alternatives are for transit to connect our region. This has really been found through diligent research and the priority setting process that the General Assembly put in place to be the best alternative for our region. And there's a lot of benefits that we can go into around, of course, expanding transit and opportunities for people to reach more jobs, particularly lower income folks in our community. Losing that would be a big detriment to our neighbors and all of us.
Well, Travis, you guys laid this out in a column last week in the Chapel Hill News, and there's been a lot of comments on your column, and they address that issue that Molly just mentioned about really how real a benefit is this proposed route to people of low income. And one of the big concerns is, hey, the only people who this program is going to serve, this transit program is going to serve, are Duke students, UNC students, and their related faculty, who, while they may not have the highest of income, while their students are some of the most privileged people who live in our communities. I mean, what do you say to that?
Well, I think first, Mark, it's important just to give your listeners some context about the actual proposal and sort of what we're talking about in depth if there are folks listening who are less familiar with the Durham-Orange light rail line as proposed. So to give some of that background, as Molly alluded to, this really came out of some very good planning done by GO Triangle, which was then Triangle Transit, last decade, analyzing what sort of transit would best meet our needs connecting Durham and Chapel Hill. And so there was an extensive alternatives analysis conducted, and that alternatives analysis that was done sort of by a blue ribbon committee that GO Triangle and other local governments assembled concluded that light rail was the best option for our region.
When you say alternatives analysis, you mean literally they're looking at different transit alternatives.
Correct. Like
what might be the best way to move people around in this particular
right.
space.
And so some of the options that regions typically look at when they're doing a regional alternatives analysis are light rail transit, which a number of our peer regions have invested in and are investing in right now. Bus rapid transit, which uses bus vehicles, but still has a separate right of way. They don't mix with traffic. Some of the risk with going down a bus rapid transit path is that oftentimes those do get watered down, and so they're not true grade separated systems. And so they're not able to function as well because they have to engage with mixed traffic, which is, of course, not very rapid and not what we really need for regional connectivity. So the alternatives analysis looked at two different bus rapid transit options, a sort of expanded bus service without a grade separation option, and a light rail option. And through a number of factors that were identified by this Blue Ribbon Commission that sort of looked at the factors that were important to us, they concluded that a light rail corridor made a lot of sense. So GO Triangle then moved forward with that, and they put together what will be an initial 17-mile line connecting UNC hospitals to Austin
Avenue.
Okay,
well, when we
get
back, Travis, after the break, I want you to answer the question I asked about how is this 17-mile line that has been determined to be the best solution to moving people around the triangle going to actually serve people of limited means and low income, because that's one of the big criticisms, and we'll be right back. And welcome back to The Deep End with I'm Mark Kleinschmidt, and every week we dive down into the deep end of an important issue or in local politics or culture, and this week we're taking a look at transit in the Triangle, specifically the recent criticism that's being lobbed at the long-planned and the widely supported, and I think that's fair to say, Durham-Orange Light Rail Transit Plan, which contemplates a 17-mile light rail plan to connect the University of North Carolina's campus here in Chapel Hill to downtown Durham via Duke and out down to Alston Avenue. So before the break, you know, I was talking with Travis Creighton here about this criticism about who this plan is supposed to serve and whether it really will serve people of low income and limited means. You've heard that criticism, Travis. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I think you really just have to dive into the statistics and get the real data to understand what's happening here. And I think people making this criticism are basing it off of some anecdotes and a couple of stories that have sort of snowballed into these narratives that aren't actually rooted in the statistics. And when you really look at the line, so for comparison here, about 25% of both Durham and Orange County each are considered low. They have a residence considered low income, about 25% of the population in both. The Durham-Orange light rail line, if you look at the communities directly served along that 17-mile corridor, 43% of those residents are considered low income.
Wait, so that would be more.
That is correct.
So you're saying there's a higher percentage of low income people who live along this 17-mile line than limit than low-income people who live in Durham and
Correct.
Orange County generally?
It's a significantly higher percentage. So this 17 miles goes into a lot of low-income communities. It serves a lot of people who are probably transit-dependent, don't have access to a car or a vehicle, and it's going to improve their quality of life. And so one way to really put that into numerical terms, if you're a resident who lives on Austin Avenue, which is a more low-income area of Durham, and you need to go shopping, for example, at Patterson Place, where there's a number of places you might want to go to shop, currently, if you make that trip on a bus, it takes you 51 minutes.
And Patterson Place, that's where a Home Depot, Kohl's.
Home Depot, there's a Walmart right across there.
It's a big wine store.
Correct. Yeah. So if you wanted to get there to do shopping, it would be a 51-minute bus trip. The light rail line will cut that down to 27 minutes. So that's a dramatic quality of life improvement. And the other thing you have to think of here is by building along a corridor that is 43% low income, you're opening up new job opportunities to those residents who currently, because of their lack of transportation or just the long commutes on buses, makes it very difficult to get to jobs and access new economic opportunities. By providing much faster transit to a higher percentage of low-income residents, you're improving their quality of life and enabling them to access new economic opportunities that are currently unavailable.
Yeah, well, Molly, why can't we just put more buses out there? I mean, earlier you were talking about the success of the sales tax referendum that you worked so hard to get passed, and we all know that part of that of the funds that are being generated from that are going to enhance bus services in both Durham and Orange County. Why isn't that enough to solve the problem?
Buses are still part of the regional solution for transit and will be, you know, part of our Chapel Hill Transit service and part of the Go Triangle service and part of the data service. Moving people by light rail, it'll also allow for more funds to be used to improve the bus lines that we do have, to allow for more connectivity at the ends and at the stops that the light rail will be going to.
Well, and just to add on to that, I think this is a really important question you raise, Mark, about why light rail makes sense instead of buses. And part of it is that light rail capacity is so much greater than how many people you can fit on a bus. So the average bus can fit about 37 to 50 people, depending on a number of factors, but that's really where you max out at. On a light rail vehicle, those are designed to carry hundreds of people at once. And so when we're talking about the need to move people along major corridors, and we know that the 54 corridor and the 15501 corridor that the light rail will serve, it's increasingly more congested. There are increasingly more cars on the road. There are increasingly more people needing to get to places along that area. If you are able to fit all those people onto a light rail vehicle, you alleviate that traffic congestion, and you can move people to the areas that are most in demand, most efficiently with light rail. And that's something buses just can't do.
Well, you see, now, Travis, I've heard that argument before, and I tend to have sympathized with that argument. But here's what I hear from not just folks on the street, but people who have sought not one, but sought elected office here locally, who take trips to the General Assembly to advocate against transit funding or visit impoverished neighborhoods and neighboring counties. And those kinds of folks are saying that, right, buses the way you're talking about them right now, this kind of conversation that you're having about buses, you're right, that's not adequate. But bus rapid transit, those three magic words, can solve all these problems. It comes at a lower price tag. You can take it off the road and bring it to low-income neighborhoods and connect to job centers without having to, charge higher taxes to people who say they never want to use it. Isn't that right?
It's a little more complicated than that, as you might imagine.
I'm shocked.
Mark. And so bus rapid transit can provide some of those benefits. But at the end of the day, because you are still using bus vehicles, you still have less capacity than on a light rail line. So, for example, UNC Hospitals and Duke Hospitals, both of which will be served by the light rail line, which are major employment centers, have been for a long time, and all estimates suggest will continue to be. When people need to move in and out of there at rush hour in the morning and rush hour in the evening, bus rapid transit still is going to be less efficient than a light rail vehicle because you just can't fit as many people in as quickly. And so there is that concern that your capacity is going to be lessened over time.
Don't they say that, I mean, at UNC Hospitals right now, there's a bus pulling up during rush hour, like what, every 30 seconds?
It's about,
every,
I think,
30
every 30
seconds?
Seconds, there's a bus going in and out of there without bus rapid transit. So we're already reaching sort of peak capacity with buses there. So to move,
I mean, you
more
couldn't
people,
move another bus in if they're coming
correct.
At that
so,
fast. There's
so,
no room for another bus.
Right. So to move more people in, if we expect the growth to continue and jobs to continue to be concentrated there, we need a different type of technology, and light rail is that technology. Now, to some of these other points, it is true that the initial investment in bus rapid transit, even if you do build a fully separated right-of-way and you're not doing mixed traffic, the upfront cost is less. So it's about 70% of the cost of light rail, which is honestly a little bit less, but not as much as you might think based on some of the claims that folks make. But the other thing you have to take into consideration are two factors. The first is that when we look at peer regions and we look at the long-term maintenance and operating costs, mm-hmm. bus rapid transit costs more in the long run. So you save in that initial upfront investment, but the cost to maintain those bus vehicles and their useful life is significantly less than light rail vehicles.
Well, God forbid we look long range in how we invest in any technology to solve any problem. I mean, that just seems like that's the problem we have with so many, with so much policy implementation here in the Triangle. After we take this our next break, I want to come back and just talk a little bit with you, both of you, who've been longtime watchers of politics here in Chapel Hill, Orange County, and Durham, about what we think this issue is going to mean to political races, not just here in this big year of a presidential election, but in races in coming years. So let's talk about that when we come back. We're back in the deep end, talking transit policy across the triangle. And before the break, I asked the question, how is this issue, transit issue, going to affect politics here in Orange County, Chapel Hill, and Durham in the coming years? This is one of those fights I thought we'd won. Back when I was mayor, we passed a sales tax increase, passed overwhelmingly. People who are supporting the regional transit program were being elected to the Board of Aldermen in Carrboro, the council in Chapel Hill, the commissioners overseeing all of this. And now we're getting strong, credible voices saying, this isn't the way we should move forward. You know, is Orange County prepared to continue with this plan, or are we looking at a total political shift here that puts the whole thing in the can? What do you think, Travis?
Well, I think there's a lot to your question, Mark, and it sort of goes to multiple levels of governance. But as far as to get to sort of the end of your question there about the local impact, I think we're at a place where the original bus and rail investment plan, which was part of the 2012 transit referendum, was endorsed by a significant number of voters. I think it was about 69% of people voted to approve that tax at that point in time. And the second thing to look at is just last year, public policy polling included a question in their Chapel Hill municipal poll about the Durham Orange Light Rail line, and 69% of Chapel Hill voters say they support that line. I think it's clear this community is still committed to transit. We want transit. And frankly, when I look to our policymakers, I don't see another alternative. We are at a point where we can't add parking and automobiles are just simply not the wave of the future. So there's just not a feasible way forward to continue to invest in an outdated technology that has extremely negative environmental consequences, extremely negative social consequences for people who live in automobile-oriented communities. Transit really is the way of the future. And when you look at peer regions around the country like Denver and Seattle, they're doing so much more with their transit there. They're making significant investments because they see that that's going to position them to be economically competitive in the future, that's going to attract and retain residents, and that's going to make them places that people want to live, where people can work, and where there's a really strong and robust economy. We're behind in that sense, and we've got to catch up. I also think it's very foolish of our local elected officials to even think about giving up the potential of our light rail plan right now. Secretary Anthony Fox, who's the U.S. Secretary of Transportation, mm-hmm. spoke at the Wake Transit launch event about a month or two ago. And one thing he said is that competition for federal funding is getting more and more fierce, and Congress is not allocating any more money. The benefit we have right now is our light rail line is right in the queue right now. We are so close to getting that federal funding.
That's
and
right.
So to press reset now is to give up millions and millions of dollars in federal funding and to require even more of a local match down the line, because the percent of federal funding we'll be able to get is just going to be less with more cities competing. So to me, that's not a real option. It's a very foolish and fiscally irresponsible step to take. We still need to support this plan, and we need to move forward with it, because it really the future of our region really does hinge on this project.
But Molly, what about Raleigh? I mean, that's where a significant number of these dollars are supposed to come from.
Right, yes. And of course, I want to point that out, because although some anti-transit legislators were able to get a light rail cap put in, ultimately, it was a bipartisan fight to get that cap removed, because a data-driven priority-setting process was put in place by our legislature to prioritize projects, and the Durham Orange County Light Rail was scored very highly.
Yeah, and I was proud to be chair of our local Metropolitan Planning Organization when we helped lead that process to get it to score higher. Now, Molly, folks want to engage with something here locally over the next few weeks about and understand, really appreciate transit and what it does for us. What can they do Yeah, and there's an event coming up soon?
Yeah, great. We have an exciting thing happening that Go Triangle is coming to Carrboro. The 405 will be starting its route now in Carrboro, and we're going to do a kickoff on Monday, August 8th. Alderperson of Carrboro, Damon Siles, and I are planning a 8:14 a.m. kickoff starting at Weaver Street Realty. So please join us to ride the first bus out of Carrboro to Durham.
On August 8th.
On August 8th.
At 8 o'clock in the morning. Let's be at Weaver Street Realty. All right. Thank you guys so much for being here with me. And I hope you can join me again the next time you drop a provocative column in the Chapel Hill News. I want you here and we'll be talking about it. Thank you for joining me here again in the Deep End. We'll see you next week.